Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and we're going to take a look at wetlands to begin the show today. They are a very important part of our Wisconsin ecosystem, and we'll talk about how they relate to our groundwater and our geology, and got a couple pretty good people to talk with us about it. Ken Bradbury and Katie Belfus with us. Ken's the director and state geologist of the Wisconsin Geological and Natural History Survey with the UW and UW Extension. Ken, great to have you back.
Glad to be here, Larry.
Also with us, Katie Belfus. Katie, gee, what can I say about her? She's the Outreach Programs Director at the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. She does a whole lot for our wetlands and for that association. And she's going to talk with us about it and about the conference that's coming up. You may be concerned with groundwater extraction, maybe land use changes, and may have some general questions about wetlands. So I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. You can email us. The email address is talk@wpr.org. Or go ahead and post on our Facebook page, title, The Larry Mueller Show. I'd love to hear from you. And, you know, Ken, let's start. What are the connections, or how are our groundwater, our whole groundwater system, how is that connected with our wetlands?
Well, it's I like to say that groundwater and surface water are really a single resource, particularly in Wisconsin, a humid place like Wisconsin, so that and wetlands and other surface water features don't exist separate from that. So they're, wetlands can be sources or sinks for groundwater, as can streams, lakes, and springs. But I think the important message I like to give people is that it's all a system. Our water resources are all connected to each other, and they all interact one way or another with each other. And so you can't study them, manage them, or really understand them in separation, but they all have to be thought of together.
Yeah, you might look at a wetland, and I know people have done this, look at a wetland and say, why do we have a wetland here? And that's a pretty good question sometimes.
Sure, yeah, and so there are different kinds of wetlands. I mean, what are generally called bogs are generally just lower places in the landscape that are getting water from surface water or from rainwater, and they are often recharge areas for groundwater. On the other hand, the kind of wetlands we call fens are often discharge places for groundwater. But they all are places where often the water table or the top of the groundwater system is very close to the surface and intersecting the surface, and so water is the unifying thing there.
Yeah, and the Wisconsin Wetlands Association, of course, Katie, you look at all of them, don't you?
We do. We love all wetlands. And one of the things we spend a lot of time on is helping folks see wetlands on the landscape, because everywhere I go, folks say, oh, you got to have a cattail, and you got to have a duck, and you got to have open water, and that's a wetland. And that's true, but there's lots of different kinds. You can have wetlands where you can't see any water. You just see green moss and lovely things like that. But if you stepped in there, you'd get wet. And wetlands aren't wet all the time. That's the other thing that sometimes is confusing. Somebody will say, well, hey, I can drive my truck in there in the winter or in the fall. That can't be a wetland. But if you came back in the spring, you sure couldn't take a truck through there without a lot of damage and a lot of stuck of your truck, right?
Yeah. So it's it doesn't have to be wet all year round to be a wetland.
It does not. And that's one of the things you have to really pay attention to when you're looking at a particular site to know if it's a wetland or not, is look at it in different times of the year. And sometimes if it's a really dry year or a really wet year, things are going to look very different. And that's one of the fascinating things, is to just study that over time and see how dynamic those systems can be.
Pretty cool. You know, Jim in Lake Geneva has a question, one that I've not seen before. Let's go there. Hi, Jim. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry, and thanks for taking my call. I have a question. In Lake Geneva, it's come to light that the zebra mussels have caused, I think it's zooplankton and things, the stuff that small fry fish eat, and they're pretty much gone from the Lake Geneva watershed, and they're blaming it on zebra mussels. And, of course, this is going to affect the fish populations, and game fish are pretty much going to be done now in a few years. It's all part of from what my geological education was, that zebra mussels, the whole situation is screwing things up. And I just wonder what the effect of zebra mussels on wetlands, especially those that are open year-round, like the Horicon Marsh. People use skiffs. The same skiffs are used in other lakes which have zebra mussels. That's how they get around. And I just wonder what the prognosis is, either for Lake Geneva or for how this is going to impact wetlands in the future.
Yeah, that's an interesting question.
Well, I think I'll go back to something that Ken said earlier, which I really appreciated him saying, because I couldn't agree more, is that it's all connected. And if zebra mussels are mostly a lake invasive species, you don't have, most lakes have wetlands somewhere around them.
Yeah.
It's all part of the same system. What the specific impacts of zebra mussels are, that's not my area of expertise, but I will speak generally that invasive species of all kinds, and in many cases plants are the ones that we talk about in wetlands, they are wreaking havoc on our natural systems, and it is something that we should be careful about and working against, because they are changing things that we know we value. For example, he mentions fish populations, and they may be changing things that we don't yet understand that will have a long-term impact on our ability to achieve benefits from these beautiful natural areas. So
yeah.
Invasive species are a problem, and I think awareness that it is an issue, awareness of what the species are and what we each can do to prevent their spread is a really important thing. Cleaning your boats, cleaning your shoes, being aware of the fact that you are a vector in the landscape to
mm-hmm.
move these species around.
So invasives can have an effect on our wetlands and maybe cause us to lose some wetland. What are the main ways that we lose wetlands? How do we lose them?
We lose mostly wetlands by landscape change, by draining, filling, construction, development, and the like. A lot of that was done early in our state's history for agricultural purposes, very important part of our state economy and our state way of life, and at the same time have had a very dramatic impact on Wisconsin's wetlands. Wisconsin's lost about half of the original wetlands that we had, and it's not just agriculture. There's a lot of different things going on there. We're lucky that we still have half because our neighbors to the south have far less than that, and so we have that going for us, and our organization is working to draw the line there and in fact restore back some of the wetlands that we've lost.
As you take a look at the groundwater systems, if changes in the if the groundwater is diverted to other uses, that's got to have an impact, Ken.
Certainly, yeah. And so we, as Katie said, land use change can often affect groundwater levels. When we say dig drainage ditches, those are done with a purpose. Usually, it's often to lower groundwater levels. But then if there are wetlands nearby, you're affecting those as well. And the other thing that can affect groundwater levels is overpumping, of overuse of groundwater by wells near wetlands. And we know that's happened in some places as well. So it's always often a combination of many things.
So how your role primarily, Katie, is, if I'm not mistaken, of the association is one of education. You advocate, obviously, in many ways, but...
Yeah, well, we see wetlands as a solution to some problems that people face and communities face, whether it's clean water, water supply, quality of life. We want wetlands to not be a combative issue, but a win-win solution for a lot of different perspectives. So we work with agricultural communities. We work with private landowners. We work with local governments to say, hey, what are your community needs, and how can we help address those by restoring and protecting wetlands in your community? And looking at the whole system, as Ken has been pointing out during our conversation today, that you can't look at just protecting wetlands or just protecting lakes. If you're not looking at the whole thing, then you're not going to win. So that's a lot of our education and outreach is helping people see wetlands on the landscape, see what benefits they provide to themselves personally or to their community, and how can we keep wetlands on the landscape and restore wetlands in order to reach those benefits.
So if I just went out and bought a 40-acre lot somewhere and I'm looking out, I've got some wetland as part of this. Can I call your group up and say,
Absolutely. Please do. And actually, my first advice would be to check out our website, because we have a brand new website as of this past fall that's set up specially to be easily navigable for private landowners and folks from local government communities to get information about how do you recognize if you have wetland on your landscape, how do you know if it's healthy or not, what steps can you take in order to improve the health of your wetland, and what resources can we help connect you with in order to do that.
And the site, we have a link on our Facebook.
Sure.
Lexi, do we have a link on our Facebook page to the... Yeah, she's saying, just a minute.
WisconsinWetlands.org is where you can go and take a look at that. And then we have a number of publications as well that are available for private landowners, and links to other sites where folks can get information about taking care of wetlands on their property.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we have a link up on our Facebook page. I just glance over at it. You can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us. The email address is talk@WPR.org, or go ahead and post on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. You've got a conference, and we should talk about that a minute before we take some calls. And we talk about this every year, but it's always great to hear what you're up to, and first, why the conference and what's going
on. Sure, this is the 22nd year that we've had this conference, and it's an annual opportunity to bring together folks, researchers, managers, regulators, students, academics, to come together and share the latest information, research, management techniques, and build a community of people, build those relationships that will help with projects down the line. So we bring in keynote speakers, like Ken this year, and Tom Meyer, who was the project property manager up at Mead Wildlife Area for 30-some years, is going to also address the conference. And then we also invite folks to give presentations of their own research and work so that we're sharing that information. This year, we also have 14 students competing in our student presentation competition. So again, trying to reach the next generation of wetland scientists and help bring them into the fold and get connected and with all those that information and all those nice people. So we'll be up in Stevens Point. We move the conference around every year. Apropos to our conversation today, our theme is wetland connections. So trying to make those connections between people, between science, between groundwater, surface water, all that good stuff.
Well, let's take a call or two. We'll continue on this. I want to learn a little bit more about it and find out what Ken's going to be talking about as well. But let's go to Corey in Oshkosh next. Corey, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling in regards to your guest comments about the changing landscape. What I see with great frequency is in regards to agriculture. Because of the value of the land and what they can get for renting the tillable property, and they want as much as possible, I see, like I said, with great frequency, I see fence rows and tree lines just being destroyed so they can get that tillable area. And as well, you may have some small pieces of wetland on the property, and they just fill them in and till them up, you know. And I was curious if your guests see those trends and what type of impact that really has. Like I said, it's with a great frequency that it's very, very common to see those fence rows disappear.
Yeah. It is.
No, you're absolutely right, and it is a concern, and particularly as commodity prices go up, we see more of that happen, mm-hmm. or people who've put their property into like CRP programs and the like take it and disenroll that land and go back into agriculture. And who can blame them if they need the money? Our farms are hurting in many ways, our small farms. So it is a concern. We work closely with the Natural Resources Conservation Service so that we're reaching those folks who are involved in those programs, and we're trying to work with farming groups to help farmers make the connection that sometimes the investment of draining a wetland is not going to pan out. Many, many farmers that I've talked to have said, gosh, I drained that and I really thought I could get a good crop, and after about 6 years, I'm done. I can't. It's too much work. It's not worth it for me. That's not always true, but sometimes folks find that it's not worth it. It doesn't provide the long-term gain that we thought, because the water the water wants to be there.
Yeah.
So it is a challenge. And there, I think there's a way that we can marry wetlands and agriculture on the landscape together for the benefit of the farm operations. And that's the work that we're trying to do.
That's what you're trying to do. Yeah. Are there regulations on?
There are regulations, and that's not my area of specialty. There's certainly the Department of Natural Resources has some authority. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has authority. There's certain other regulations and things that folks need to pay attention to. But it's not a foolproof situation.
Yeah.
So there, you know, this destruction does still occur.
And we'll take some more calls. Lee and Lila, you're coming up next, but I want to just remind you about our guests today. Katie Belfus, Outreach Programs Director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. Ken Bradbury, Director and State Geologist of the Wisconsin Geological and Natural History Survey at the University of Wisconsin and Extension. Great to have them with us. Lexi Broad, our on-air producer today, here on the Ideas Network. Coming up at 11:45 today, we'll talk about owls with the director of the International Owl Center over in Minnesota. Great to have that show coming up. But right now, we're dealing with wetlands. Taking a look at groundwater, wetlands, and geology with our two guests, Katie Belfus and Ken Bradbury. Join in at 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or post on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. And let's go to Lee in Phillips, Wisconsin next. Hi, Lee. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. Ken, Katie, and Larry, I own a property that has frontage, lake frontage, and it is wetland.
Okay.
It can't be built on, and it can't be basically used. But I am being assessed at the same rate as buildable land. And I'm wondering if there's any program, a tax break program or something like that, where that land could be put into that frontage could be put into some kind of reserve. There's about 350, maybe almost 400 feet of lake frontage, and it's all wetland behind there, about 11 acres total.
Okay.
Good
all
question.
Right. Yeah, good question.
Good question. And we hear from landowners with questions about assessments and property taxes a lot. And one thing that we have learned from my colleague Aaron has done a lot of work over the years to see that there's a lot of there's not consistency across the state of how assessors value wetland property or what kind of classification they put the wetland land in, because there isn't a wetland. There isn't an assessment classification that's wetland. There's
okay.
There's recreational land. There's wasteland. There's open undeveloped area. There's lots of different classifications, and there's not a lot of consistency across. And we have worked with the assessor community to a certain extent to try to help that situation, but it's not concluded at this time. So one of the things to do is to get together with your assessor on your property and take your assessment and speak with this person and say, here are my concerns and here's what you've done and what are my options? Because often they may not be with you when they're doing the assessment, and it might be that you can understand what their reasoning is and or persuade them in some way or another. We have a tax guide that we put together some years ago that you can get by contacting our office. There's one significant thing that has changed about it, so the publication is not, we have to update it a little bit, but it doesn't sound like that situation applies to you. The other thing I might throw out, Lee, is the possibility of approaching a local land trust in your community, because if it's not developable land anyway, you can possibly put an easement on that portion of the land so that you're not allowed to develop it. And sometimes there can be tax benefits of that. Not always, and I would have you consult, you know, the experts there. But look, reach out to your local land trust.
Your local, and where would you find your local land trust?
Well, the great thing is we have an organization in Wisconsin called Gathering Waters, which is Wisconsin's Alliance for Land Trust. And their website will connect you if you type in your county or use their little map. It'll connect you with the land trusts that are working in your area. So it's very easy.
So Wisconsin Land?
Gathering Waters.
Gatheringwaters.org
is that site, and they will be able to connect you. We have more than 50 land trusts in Wisconsin, which is fabulous.
And we have talked about with the folks from Gathering Waters before. So, Lee, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's give Lila a chance to join in, too. Hi, thank you for calling from Milwaukee.
Well, good morning, Larry. Thank you for taking my call. I've been out to Standing Rock a few times, and a lot of us are very disillusioned and outraged about the Army Corps' decision to go ahead and grant an easement without a proper environmental impact statement. And obviously, those of us that understand the science behind it know that the water table changes seasonally. The reason I'm calling today is due to the recent Nestle's trying to purchase more of Lake Huron water from Michigan. What are we doing here in Wisconsin to protect the Great Lakes against, you know, corporations like Nestle buying up all of our water rights? What are we doing to protect ourselves?
In Wisconsin, we don't sell water rights. So, at least that I'm aware, that's not an Eastern water law concept. That's more of a Western water law thing. So we don't. In other words, if I'm a landowner, I can't sell my water rights. Now, with respect to the Great Lakes, we have there's a very important legal structure called the Great Lakes Compact that involves all the states that border the Great Lakes, as well as the Canadian provinces that border the Great Lakes, and so they have to agree on water withdrawals from the Great Lakes Basin, and that's why you've probably heard about the issues, proposal with Waukesha to get water from Lake Michigan that's apparently been approved now.
That's been in the works for
many years. Yes, yeah. Yes, indeed. And as far as what Nestle is doing, I really don't know, so I can't really speak about that.
But they would, this compact, there would have to be agreement from the compact in order for something like that to occur.
That's my understanding, Larry, but I don't claim to be an expert on the legalities of this, but that's my understanding. Yes.
Yeah. Not a wetland, but it's certainly a wet area.
You bet.
That right. Thanks, Lila. Richard and Ettrick up next. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Larry. Great show. Got a question. I've got some wetland that I tried to do an improvement with. I had the NCRS out. We're going to put in a scrape, which is basically increasing the depth of the water level in the wetland about to a foot, foot and a half, 2 feet, for wildlife habitat, nesting, you know, and for burr. And I got through the whole process, and then all of a sudden I got the person came down for a visit and said, hey, you know, EPA is kind of taking control of all the wetlands, and there's like a $500 permit application now, and if they don't approve it, you're not going to get your money back. And so they really put a lot of regulatory roadblocks in the way of, you know, I guess if someone's just trying to improve the wetland, you know, I don't want to get rid of my wetlands. I love them, but is there anything we can do about this?
Katie?
I'm scratching my head here. I'm puzzled by EPA being the agency that he's bringing up, because typically I hear about it being the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers that has the authority. But again, wetland policy is not my area of expertise. NRCS often will have good relationships with other federal agencies and with the DNR, and usually they are better able to get through wetland restoration. I mean, the caller, Richard, you have a good point that when folks are doing wetland restoration on the landscape, you're still subject to laws and permitting requirements, even though you're trying to do a good thing. But in the process of doing the good thing, you know, the regulators are in charge of making sure that it is accomplishing the good goal and isn't causing some other detrimental impacts. And so you do still have to go through that process. And I know that can be arduous. I have heard tell many times of that process being challenging. Usually it's easier when you're working through a governmental agency. So that's why I'm over here scratching my head without knowing the particulars of the situation. I think it's important for us all to remember that regulations exist to protect the public, and that yes, individuals sometimes bear the brunt of the work that comes with regulations, but it's in order to protect the quality of our water, the quantity of our water, the health of our water in these cases. And so they might be onerous at an individual level, but they exist to protect our public benefit.
Would he be wise to go back to maybe the DNR? Or another agency to get a clarification on this?
Yeah, oh, I'd be curious to know, and I'd want to ask more information from the NRCS. You know, I would encourage him to get some more details on what that means.
Yeah, definitely. I'd take another look at that one. Thanks, Richard. Good luck. Gene and Menasha, it's your turn. Hi, Gene.
Hi. Hello, Larry and your guests. I have a statement that my teacher daughter gave to me, and I think it would make a wonderful slogan. Here it is. Wetlands to our water system is as important as our kidneys are to our body.
Oh. Oh, well, you done, heard that Gene. One before, Katie?
Makes sense.
Yeah, I have heard wetlands compared to lots of different bodily functions, and that's a great one. I like the rhyme scheme there. That's very fun, and it is an important. I mean, wetlands are known to absorb and filter. And that's kidneys. You know, I'm not hip to my. I wasn't ever a medical student and whatnot. So my anatomy is not so good. Someone somewhere told me that it was not the kidneys, but a different organ that we should actually be talking about. But whatever. The point is well taken. That as we rely on our organs to clean our body, we all need to rely on wetlands for cleaning our water.
Yeah.
And they also, if I could throw this in, help to store water.
Yeah.
Too. So you know, they contribute to. Year-round stream flow in some areas in northern, say, if you go up to the national forests where you have large contiguous wetlands, those are slowly draining all summer, and that's maintaining water levels in streams. So they're a storage place as well as a natural water treatment.
And they slow the flow on the landscape, and often we see when water moves quickly across a landscape, it takes a lot of stuff with it, and a stream that's going through and in a fast speed is going to carve more and is going to take more sediment with it. We actually had a great series of photos that a farmer landowner we were working with submitted to us of water running off his restored wetland and then literally across the street on water coming off of his farm field that he had not restored. And the wetland side, the water was pouring off clear as can be, and on the farm side, it was pouring off brown. And it was just an interesting, so taken on the same day at the same place, and what that happened. So again, slowing down the flow and helping to keep the soil on the land.
Very interesting. Let's turn to Shirley in Cedarburg next. Shirley, hello to you. Thank you for calling.
Hi, I have news about an area just north of Cedarburg, at the corner of Five Corners and Highway 60. There are several acres of unused, undeveloped land up there, but now they're talking about developing. And the old-timers know that it's full of underground springs. Everyone else has either forgotten or would rather not remember. To develop this underground springs would certainly interrupt our groundwater, drinking water, and I'm very, very concerned.
Yeah. So there's a situation, Katie, you want to comment on?
Yeah, Shirley, first, thanks for being aware of this and for giving voice to something that you're concerned about. It's one of the things that we encourage from our members and listeners across the state is just be aware of what's going on and speak up when you see something. So kudos to you for that. Development that's done on areas that are wet is not going to be a good long-term solution because people don't like water in their basements, and water wants to be there. So it's gonna be there.
Yeah.
Ken,
do
you have something you want to add to that?
Well, I whenever we hear about something like this where there's a potential conflict, the first step is always to contact the people in your area who regulate this sort of thing. So over there, that would be the SewerPAC, the Southeast Wisconsin Regional Planning Commission. Our survey has done a major groundwater study for them over the years, and they have a lot of information about groundwater. Also, your county soil and water department or the county extension office could all help you get information about what's actually going on and you know what the real impacts might be.
I would add to that the good list there, Ken, and I would add to that your local water management specialist with the Department of Natural Resources. And if you go to the DNR website and just use their search term and search water management specialist, you should be able to find the person for your county.
Yeah, there you go.
So just educate yourselves, talk to the people, and see what regulations exist and whether this is the right place for that work to happen.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you so much for calling, Shirley. Appreciate it. I want to give Natalie in Milwaukee a chance to join in as well. Natalie, hi. Thank you for calling. What can we do for you?
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel is just doing an article on the high-capacity wells, but there's been a lot of press on this particular issue. The fact that they've doubled and tripled in the last few decades, and with that happening at the same time, there's been less regulatory power over the development of these wells by our DNR and less reliance on science. So that combination seems very dangerous to me, and I'm wondering where this is going to go and how much longer we're going to have to watch this happen before there's kind of regulatory issues.
Yeah. Well, that's a good question. I'm aware that, or I've heard that there'll probably be a couple of bills proposed in this legislative term that deal with high capacity wells, and their regulation. And you're quite correct that there's been controversy about how the DNR should regulate them and how much authority they have, and in particular the issue that concerns me and a lot of my hydrogeology and science colleagues is the issue of cumulative impacts and how which means that the addition of the impacts of many wells together, the impact of any particular well can be actually quite modest, but when you have many of them clustered in the same area, then those impacts, those small impacts, all add up to bigger impacts, and that's where we start having problems. And the issue right now is that the DNR only has authority to look at one well at a time, and that to many of us is not really an appropriate way to be regulating or managing water resources. But that's the law we have right now. And so pay attention to what's going on in the legislature to see how that works out.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Ralph in Hayward wondered if there's an organization in Wisconsin that cleans up old dump sites that are located near wetlands. Mm. I don't know of any.
That's stumping me, too. Yeah, sorry, Ralph. I can't help you out there.
And I guess we have to move on from that. Well, we just honestly don't know. David in Madison, your turn. Hi, David.
Hello, thanks for taking my call. One of my concerns is the increased volume of manures being spread into the farm fields. I'm North Dane County here. There are some of the waterfowl production areas set aside. But what's been occurring is instead of old man Brigham going down the road with his little manure spreader, it's gone into where you are now injecting the manures into the ground, and most recently it's being pumped through like 8-inch pipes for miles and being spread, poured over these fields. I have a private well. I've had that for a long time, just had it redone. I had my nitrates down to like 8%, and now they've gone back up to 15 due to the increase of the agriculture site.
Well, that has an. Does that have an impact on wetlands as well, Katie?
As we started the show saying, all water is connected, and so unfortunately, it does, because depending on the timing and method of application, some of that manure potentially could run into streams and wetlands and lakes. So it's a very challenging situation. I'm a little bit at a loss of how to comment because it is hard. We have to get rid of the waste somewhere, but there are implications.
Yeah, you bet. And the manure management is an ongoing issue in the dairy state here. You mentioned, David, there's a kind of a trade-off. You mentioned some of it's injected into the ground. Well, why is that done? That is done to limit runoff. And so it's a good thing for surface water, but maybe it works a better or less good thing for groundwater. So it's an ongoing issue, and you hear in the news of we have manure digesters proposed, which is one part of the solution. Moving the manure to larger land areas when we have larger farms, that's probably necessary, because one solution is spreading things out so that the concentration in any one spot is not as great. But it's an ongoing concern.
Yeah, it definitely is. Are these kinds of concerns being discussed and stressed at the upcoming conference?
I don't, off the top of my head, think we have a manure-based presentation. I know we have at least one high-capacity well presentation in addition to what Ken is going to be delivering as our keynote speaker. So there are a wide variety of issues. I don't remember one about yet manure.
But maybe, again, go through some of the things that are being discussed.
Yeah. Well, we've got a symposium that's being organized on biodiversity conservation, amphibians, reptiles, and wetlands. So we've got a full day of talks all about those kinds of critters and the latest research and ongoing concerns with regard to their research and management. Ken's going to be giving our keynote presentation, and we should let him chat about that. And then, as I mentioned, we have Tom Meyer, who was the manager at Mead Wildlife Area for 30 years. He'll be giving his presentation as well about what he learned from that landscape over 30 years.
Yeah. And Ken, what are you going to be talking about?
Well, I was very pleased to be invited to speak at this conference. So my talk is going to be called Groundwater, Wetlands, and Geology, the Invisible Links. And so I'm going to talk about these connections between groundwater and surface water. And I want to put that in the context of the state of Wisconsin and our interesting and varied geology and geography we have around the state, and just how we have wetlands everywhere in all parts of the state, but they behave somewhat differently in, you know, Door County compared to southwest Wisconsin compared to the North Woods. And they're all really fascinating, and groundwater conditions are variable in those places too, but they're all connected. So I wanted to give people an overview of how variable the state is, and how every place you go, there are these connections.
Yeah, and now the dates for that are...
The conference starts February 28th and then runs the 1st and the 2nd of March, and it's at Stevens Point at the Holiday Inn Convention Center there.
And how do people, if people want to join in, how do they do
that? Visit our website, wisconsinwetlands.org, and click on the conference link there, and that'll give you all the details about the conference, when and where, and how you can register. We still are accepting registrations through, I believe, the 23rd of February. So.
Okay, and already pretty good crowd.
Yeah, we've got a great crowd, our largest banquet crowd ever. I didn't talk about that. Our Rob Noory, the surly surveyor, is going to be talking about Wisconsin's early land surveys in the 1830s. That'll be and what that can tell us now about how to care for wetlands.
Oh, so lots of really good things coming up for you. And again, the dates are...
February 28th, March 1st, and March 2nd.
And we go to where to find out more?
Wisconsinwetlands.org.
And I assume there's a conference fee and so forth.
There is a conference fee, fairly minimal. Discounts for Wisconsin Wetlands Association members and students.
And how do we do join the association?
Wisconsin Wetlands Association, we welcome you as a member, and our website, again, wisconsinwetlands.org. ORG has a donation button. We welcome you to join on and become a member.
Well, Ken and Katie, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. We'll look forward to hearing more about that conference and what you find out there. And certainly there's no, you're not run out of business yet, for sure. There's all kinds of issues, as we learned today on the show, and appreciate you being with us.
Thank you very much.
Glad to be here. Thanks.
Thanks so much. Katie Belfus, Outreach Programs Director of the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. Ken Bradbury, Director and State Geologist of the Wisconsin Geological and Natural History Survey at the UW-UW Extension. Great to have them here, and I'm sure they'll be back in one form or another down the road. We look forward to their next visit. Coming up, we're going to hear... Let's see if I can come up with one here. Let's see. Who cooks for you? I thought I did. That's a barred owl, and we'll hear about barred owls and barn owls and snowy owls and a whole lot more coming up with our next guest here on the Ideas Network. You stay with us.